Good afternoon, everyone. Being the last speaker, and since I guess Ben already told us that we're running late, I'm going to have to even speed it up even faster. So the kind of work that we're doing at A&M is that actually there's a second paper I'll be presenting for an absent author from A&M, which will address more of their agronomic and other type of work. But this is something to talk about some of the work that's not being addressed a great deal about how to promote the crop, being that we are so concerned about establishing a crop everywhere. There are other benefits that the crop has that often is not mentioned. So what we did is that as we begin to promote the crop in the area, the first time a very large field was planted, this was actually a front page in a local newspaper simply to show about the aesthetic of the crop. And before it reached that stage, however, one way that I started to promote the crop was actually to design this particular system here, which I call a biodiesel classroom on wheel. It's something that I did along with the state of Alabama. And to promote canola mainly to say, hey, you can use canola oil on the farm. The farmer can have this thing, and they can have a press, get their oil, something that's been promoted quite a bit. But we wanted to go and actually demonstrate it along with the crop. And this is one of the time when we were demonstrating the process of using canola oil to produce biodiesel. And the diesel itself was using this particular truck that was pulling the system around. Okay. However, the other topic that was a newspaper headline one time is that turnip in the field. Okay, and well, this is what it looks like. But then, so we decided, well, let's use what the concern that the people have or the interest that they have. So we began to cut some of the foliage during the fall. Of course, we're doing winter canola. We plant around September the 15th, we would begin to plant, or as late as October the 10th. So by around the time of Thanksgiving, we would have plenty of biomass that we can actually cut. And so we did cut some of the biomass and begin to look at it as for its nutritional potentials. And information that we've published about three different papers on the aspect of the nutritional aspect of using the leaves of winter canola as a leafy green vegetable. And one other thing we noticed that the study that we did was compared it with other leafy green from the brassica family. And of course, we see that the canola is comparable with many of the others. We did some tests. A sensory analysis test, and the canola was highly desired also in sensory characteristics. So we were able to show that along with folate and protein and another characteristic of the crop that the leaves are just as good. But we know that here in the U.S. this is not something that's promoted, this is not something that's done, but abroad in India, in Africa, and many other places, they do eat the leaves of some of those rape seeds as very important vegetable. So what we did notice, again, we said that these leaves do have good mineral content, which can be used as a source of minerals for vegetables. But there are we collected sample at different stages of growth, and we see that there are certain stages when these minerals are highest. Of course, by the time we reach this stage, I don't think we want to go and cut leaves for consumption. We would only promote it at the earliest time. And the earliest time, one thing that we did notice was a problem. This is a major concern. We grew our canola in a soil that's about 5.3 pH. And the aluminum content, along with the iron, had a positive relationship, and the aluminum was way too high than you would want in something that you're going to promote for people to consume. So that we're doing some more work on this and trying to make sure that we take care of this problem. But the other kind of work that we did was to look at other nutritional potential of this crop, And one thing that we did was to use an animal model whereby we use Fisher male 344 rats. These rats are susceptible to cancer. I mean, they're bred for that. And we, at certain stage of growth, we would inject. This is with the food science people downstairs who do some of this type of work in our department. I mean, in the School of Agriculture. So one thing that we did is to create these different type of diets and to feed the animals with by, this is soybean oil and canola oil, but also the canola, we took the seeds and roast the seeds slightly so we can ground it properly to decrease the moisture for better grounding capability. We also germinate some of the seeds and to the sprout level, just like alfalfa sprout, something that you can use as in a vegetable type of consumption. And then we create some feeding trials with those rats. Of course, these rats were injected with a carcinogenic compound to initiate the cancer process in them. And then we collect these kind of informations after sacrificing the rats after a certain stage of growth. And then we collected the colon and in the liver and begin to analyze for some of the characteristic of precancerous characteristic that you would find. So, and mainly this is what tells us whether this is a very healthy animal that would have no sign of any, the precursor of cancer formation, which we begin to see here in these cribs. So the work that we did with this kind of diet was to begin to look how prolific or less so that these characteristics begin to show up in the various type of diets. So what we see that when we say seeds here, this is when we just substitute about 5% or 10% of the meal with seed that's been ground to become part of the feeding diet. And as we can see, the key, all these slides, the next few slides that I'm going to show, they all look pretty much the same. What they're showing is that every time we introduce this, this is JS stands for Jetton, that's a canola cultivar that we're using. So at 5%, at 10% Jetton. And then this is the same type of stuff from Jack Brown's lab, Ida Gold, the peas for Pacific Gold, the two mustard that we use also. So what we're seeing is that every time we introduce these things in a diet, they do have an effect, a positive effect in decreasing the precancerous lesion that would show. So when we look at this thing in terms of the sprouts, this is when we germinate it and it reaches a certain stage, we freeze dry it and then ground it to make it become part of the meal. We see that again, the control, which is mainly cornstarch and other the prescribed meal that's normally given to these rats, by substituting, we're seeing the positive effect of these diets into the animal. Also, when we look at the comparison of the total number of these kind of lesion, we're seeing Jetton is doing very well comparing to the control. But likewise with the other mustard. So we know that this has something to do with the isothiocyanate relationship that exists. Of course, these Jack Brown material are very high in glucosinolate as opposed to the Jetton. So therefore, it tells us just the presence of the minor amount of glucosinolate that begins to break down in the isothiocyanate is actually what probably could be making the differences that we're seeing. So again, and looking at the mustard and the canola seed, their effect for the number of crips per foci, as I showed you in the earlier slide, that the number of these indicators are important as to the proliferation of the cancer into the tissue. And we're seeing that under all condition that the presence of these kind of canola, brassica, and the other higher level brassicas also decrease these type of aspects. So we continue the work to see that whether or not, even though this thing is much, the lines from Jack Brown are much higher. This is about 300 plus micromole of glucosinolate than it has in this, but yet the presence of the low level of glucosinolate here is also has a positive effect. So one of the, again, when we look at the incidence, just the incidence of these tumors, we see that the Jetton is still comparable in giving less quantity. Again, right here, the tumor incidence itself, we see that tumor numbers actually decrease also. So what we're trying to do is to come to the point where can we go, the activity in the liver, which is, this is what we do want to see. We want to see that it's not decreasing the activity of certain compounds in the liver. So therefore, that's a positive result also, as opposed to the lower activity that we see with the rat, with the control animal that that's very high in cancer incidence. We also use separate for the fat that we add to the meal in the diet. It's traditionally the soybean that would be added, and when we do substitute soybean for with canola, we see that the number of tumors also significantly decreased. And looking at soybean, which we traditionally use in these type of diets, and compared to the canola, again, a much better result when we use canola for this type of thing. I think these are the kind of data which were used by the FDA to actually give canola a quality of health stamp of approval. But however, a lot of these things, we have not completed all the work that we have to do. Some of the morphological changes we see whenever these the new diets is provided is the disruption of the membrane in some of these cells. And then by disrupting these membrane, then we do, this is where we have a lower count in some of the incidents that would otherwise remain intact. So what are we saying? So we're saying that there's potential for this crop, for canola, for us to promote it as much as possible as having those health qualities, those characteristics. We know that it's an underutilized crop as compared to soybean. But what other work can be done with it to actually have the canola be used more into the food industry for this type of work? And definitely we need more work to be done with clinical trials with adult human who have these type of problem already, because what we're seeing is that we can see a decrease in the proliferation of these type of cancer initiation just with the use, the introduction of the canola in the diet. So how can we do this? Well, I'm not in the food a food scientist, but we're pretty sure that by using these sprouts in salads, by as a leafy green vegetable, and in other ways that we can isolate some product from canola as co-products and to increase them in other type of food, to see if these things would have an effect on the human diet to decrease the proliferation of cancer. So this is all I have for this time. Thank you.
Can we allow for one question, or Ernest? Somebody's got a quick question.
Yes, ma'am. Get it there? Well, the question as you hear, how can we get canola in the market as a substitute for collard? Well, in the South, where from Alabama, we live in Alabama. In Alabama, collard is probably the number one green vegetable among a certain group of the population, the African American group of people. And this, they already, the people in our location are already using our canola as a green vegetable without the need for the FDA to come and say you can do it. But the fact is, how can we put it there? Well, I think it would take an effort from the U.S. Canola Association, some funding to do more field research, there are more aspects of the plant which must be studied before we can begin to promote it as a green vegetable. We have another study going on right now where the little tidbit I mentioned there about aluminum and iron is a major concern, depending where you, and it's not just aluminum and iron, it's all the other metals, because if you grow it in a acidic condition, you're also going to have an increase in availability of those other metals along with the aluminum, and then you can create some toxicity problem in the leaves, and which I have seen, and we have a paper that we're about to publish about that within the next few months or so. Yes, yes, sir.
Those crop stages that you're eating at, is there any study on looking at it in the bolting stage?
Yes.
It becomes very succulent.
Yes, that's very true. Well, I went in somebody's paper here. That's very true because the nutritional study that we did, we looked at it at rosette, bolting, and just at the stage of flowering, those three stages. And we are seeing a significant difference as to by the time we have more leafiness, tender leafiness, around the bolting stage, where it's just about to go and turn into flowering. But at that stage also, we see that some of the aluminum is also significantly, at least the aluminum is our own problem. It's our problem in the making. It's not something you're gonna see everywhere. If it's growing in soil that's above 6.2 or so, you would not see that aluminum problem. The aluminum is with us because we're growing it in a 5.3 acidic condition.
Okay, thank you.